Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another draft podcast on the Baseball America podcast feed. I'm Carlos Collazo, joined by Peter Flaherty today, and we got a fun episode today. We had an interview with Coach Sean McGrath, who is the pitching coach and player development analyst at Iowa. So we're basically just going to tee up that interview and that conversation. It was a lot of fun for me, Peter. I'm sure you had a blast with it as well, but we're basically just here to tee that up, maybe plug a few things and hop straight into that interview.
Yeah, I had a high bar coming into this week. I was super juiced up to have Coach McGrath on, but it even cleared my expectations by a wide margin. There was a lot of knowledge dropped on both of us. I think we asked a great set of questions where he touched on the individual prospects he's got on his team while also really getting into the nitty-gritty pitching side of things and talking about the under-the-hood stuff.
Yeah, hearing about his pitching philosophy, like how he views player development at the college level, how he uses analytics and data, like trying to train for command, like how you view pitch quality. I thought it was all super fascinating. I think it's in line with a lot of the conversations we've had in recent weeks just on various stuff in the college game. So it was really fun to hear about just what he's doing and the pitching staff that Iowa has this year. I definitely left that conversation really excited to see the Brody Brecks and the Marcus Morgans of the world, and in addition to a number of the other arms on the staff. But I mean, really quickly, Coach McGrath goes over his background in a bit more detail. But he played at Lafayette College in the early 2010s for 4 years. After that, he was a pitching coach and recruiting coordinator at Iona College. He worked briefly as a scouting director for Prep Baseball Report in New Jersey. Then he spent time at Elon, where he coached first-round pick George Kirby. You might know him as a upcoming ace in the big leagues for the Mariners. He then spent some time as a coach in the Mariners organization on the minor league side and the pro side in general before returning to the college game, where he now enters his second season with Iowa as a, again, pitching coach and player development analyst. So I hope you guys enjoy that conversation. Before we hop into it, Peter, I'll just let you plug whatever you might want to plug. And also just thank you guys for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. Send us any feedback, any comments, any questions, any concerns you might have with the show. But otherwise, really thank you guys for listening and supporting BA. I think we got top 30s rolling out on the site this week as we were recording this a little bit earlier in the week. But when you're listening to this, you should be able to see full top 30s for teams. I know the college preview content is humming along. But Peter, what do you have coming up?
Yeah, it's all college preview stuff. So starting next week, you're going to have top 25 capsules on every team in the top 25. We've got a lot of other supplementary stories that were really fun to write, and I think that you guys will really enjoy. And then now, you know, we're only 3 or so weeks from the college season, and then it's a sprint to the finish. So it's going to be stuff all year for the next 4.5 months combined with all of the draft stuff and the draft cycle and monitoring that. So it's going to be a really fun time, I think.
Yeah, 2024 is going to be a blast. I've actually booked some of my trips. Have you booked your trips coming up, Peter?
I'm locked into the Desert Classic MLB4, whatever they're calling it. I'm K-State opening night, so I'm going to get Loma Vita, RJ Green, Kalen Culpepper, and I really hope it's a close game so that Tyson Nabors throws in the eighth, ninth. That would be very fun to see him against some of those Cal guys.
Yeah, so I'll be at the Shriners Classic for the second year in a row at Globe Life in Texas. Good field of college teams there. I mean, obviously the key guy I'm excited to see is your boy Travis Bezzana getting a live exam. Oh, yeah. It'll be great. Obviously, there'll be a bunch of other talented players, but the main draw for me is Bezzana, who's got a chance to be the number one overall pick in the draft. We'll see what happens with that. But again, just teeing up this interview, we'll get out of the way and get that interview started so you guys can hear about the expertise and insightfulness. There's
I'll
a word there somewhere,
it.
Peter.
Out loud. I liked it. Nicely.
Here is Coach Sean McGrath with Iowa. So thank you guys for listening. And we're here with Coach Sean McGrath from Iowa. Coach, thank you for joining us. We're really excited to talk some baseball, talk some pitching, and get a little information about what you do and how you're able to maximize pitching development. So thanks for joining us and welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. Really excited to be on with you guys and to talk shop.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get into the weeds, can you just briefly kind of talk about your coaching background, your background as a player, the various stops that you've made prior to being at Iowa? I believe this is your second year or your third year.
Second year.
Yeah. So just kind of tell us what that path has been like for you.
It's been a really interesting path. I will tell you, I've been luckier than most in that I wasn't a tremendous player by any means. I was a contributor. I pitched 4 years at Lafayette College Patriot League School in Pennsylvania. Upon graduation, had a couple scouts in my corner trying to help me land indie ball gigs, things like that, and wound up pitching a summer of independent ball, really kind of lackluster performance, but I was able to get re-signed. I was essentially 2012's version of the guy who had some stuff and really no location at all, right? Like no ability to throw it anywhere near the zone.
Yeah.
And so I was re-signed, and you know, in the meantime, I was emailing basically every local Division I school in the, you know, New York, New Jersey area that recruited me out of high school, looking for volunteer gigs, because I felt like that was the environment most conducive for my training, and to help me get the most out of like an off season, while also trying to get my first taste in coaching, because I knew I had a passion for helping others. I just didn't know how much that passion was real and how much I wanted to explore it after I was done playing. Pat Carey, the head coach at Iona College in New Rochelle, New York, reached out to me. He said, listen, I just lost my pitching coach. Would you be interested in interviewing? Essentially, you know, 22 years old, I didn't think I had any opportunity to actually land the job, even though it was a part-time gig. I took the interview thinking it'd be a great experience. And a couple days later, he offered me the job to be their pitching coach. And so I spent my first 3 years at Iona, essentially couldn't handle, I needed insurance, that type of thing. And after my third year, I jumped on board with Prep Baseball Report. I was fortunate to have the opportunity to basically kickstart Prep Baseball Report in the state of New Jersey, knowing that it was kind of like a holdover for me, you know, as I searched for an opportunity to be a full-time college coach. That was where my passion lied. And at that point, I knew that's what I wanted to do. And so I was there until about December when I was hired at UMass Lowell, who was transitioning from D2 to D1. And so I had two really interesting years there as we tried to compile and develop a Division I roster. And after that, I had the opportunity to go to Elon University. That is really where I started to kind of evolve as a pitching coach in terms of my ability to utilize, grasp pitching data, analytics, all that sort of thing. So I was there for 2 years. We had a really, really nice 2 years highlighted by a couple really awesome draft arms. And I decided to take an opportunity with the Seattle Mariners. I was with them for 3 years, first year being COVID, and then high end, and then double A. And then, you know, in last fall, I jumped on board here at Iowa, and I've been here for 2 years. And, you know, apart from the cold, which I don't really love, everything else has been, you know, a dream come true. So,
yeah, that's phenomenal.
That's my story.
Go ahead, Peter.
No, I was going to say I love it. I'm a Northeast guy myself, so I love, like, I remember writing you up for the assistant coaches pieces that I had wrote and that I had written. And I love seeing all the Northeast ties with UMass Lowell, Iona, you being a Jersey guy. That fired me up. And I'm a Patriot League guy. I went to Holy Cross, so
there you go.
I love that as well. Kind of without showing your hand too much, what are – you know, your philosophies and core principles as a pitching coach, because it's no secret that really everywhere you've been, whether it be at Elon with George Kirby, Iowa now with the dudes you've got that we'll get into, and even in Seattle. But you've had a massive amount of success really everywhere that you've gone, and have kind of established yourself as one of the premier pitching coaches in the game. Like, I know right now, if I'm a high school arm, and I'm a talented high school arm and I want to maximize my ability, I'm looking at where Coach McGrath's at and what he's doing. So what are kind of your pillars as a pitching coach?
First of all, I appreciate the kind words. You know, and at the end of the day, what you mentioned, a couple of really, really talented arms, and you know, good pitchers make good pitching coaches. And I believe that wholeheartedly. But you know, with that being said, I think my evolution as a pitching coach has, you know, allowed me to, you know, carry different things in terms of importance. But I'm really kind of set on my North Star now, which, again, understanding that your ultimate scorecard, or your ultimate report, or grade is wins and losses, right? It's our job to prevent runs. And so when you kind of dig into those layers, it really just amounts to, you know, what we call here and what they called with the Mariners, dominate the zone. And what we're trying to do with dominate the zone is understand that at its very kind of micro level, it's about leveraging counts. And so, you know, whether you're Brody Brecht or a freshman here, we really, really emphasize your ability to leverage counts, push counts forward in your favor, essentially win 0-0s and 1-1s. On a more macro level, for us, it's kind of three-prong. The three things we really, really care about are strikeouts and maximizing those, minimizing walks, and then the third component would be, you know, limiting damage, which would be for us, you know, limiting hits and then limiting slugging percentage against. Last year as a staff, we were really, really tremendous at punching guys out and limiting damage. The walks kind of got away from us. And you know, for me as a coach, it's one of those things like walks are kind of like Fight Club, right? We don't talk about it. You know, we're going to address it with strategy and you know, obviously within our development structure and systems. However, right, like the pinnacle is to be good at all three, which you saw, you know, Corey Mascara and those guys at Wake Forest, they were really good at all three facets of dominate the zone last year, and they reaped those rewards, right? And so that's where we're trying to go. That's what we're chasing each and every day. And for each guy, that's going to look a little bit different. And I think it's our ability to take like a, what we call a best version of yourself approach here, where each and every guy, yes, we're pulling on the same rope, trying to move the dominate the zone needle that will lead to more wins. But each guy has, you know, what we call a player plan, which are goals assigned to them that are going to make them the best version of themselves. And I think it's that kind of allows us to grasp the, you know, the process of development a little bit better at times than others.
I'm happy. That's awesome. You got into dominating the zone, because that was something I had written in my prep that I wanted to ask you about, because I see you, and it's really fun, actually. People should, you know, hop on Twitter and look at it. But you and Coach Mascara, Coach Weiner, even, you guys will go back and forth like in a public space and talk about pitching, which I love seeing you guys chop it up. And I think you also brought up a key point that each pitcher is so different from one another, regardless of how similar they might look to the naked eye on the mound. You know, two power guys even are so different from each other. So like, it's interesting to see, you know, Brecht and Morgan, their plan of attacks are going to be different. Obermueller's plan of attack is going to be different from them. So I'm happy you brought that up as well.
Yeah. And kind of related to that, I was curious about, you mentioned your time at Elon and with some of the arms there, obviously George Kirby being one of the most prominent guys that you've probably been able to coach at this point. Just looking at George Kirby now compared to Brody Brecht now, they seem like vastly different pitchers in terms of where their skills lie. Obviously, Brecht is known for his elite stuff. George Kirby had maybe the best command that I've seen at the amateur level. It would be a short list of players who joined him. what is the difference in coaching players who have those different strengths? And do you think it's easier or more difficult to help develop stuff or command? Because I know it feels like in the past there's been this logic of, oh, you can't develop stuff as easily as command, so take a bunch of command pitchers, add stuff. But there are some teams at the major league level that seem to do a pretty good job of just getting players to put their stuff over the plate more. So how would you talk about the differences in helping coach pitchers that are so vastly different but have similar talent levels?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. I actually think that lies in like a player plan process, the ability to, within a system, kind of allow each guy to explore a range of outcomes each and every day in practice, knowing that they have 3, 4, 5 goals assigned to them individually that we're monitoring, we're tracking, you know, we're opening and closing feedback loops for. That are going to allow them to be the best version of themselves. So like, for instance, with George, we knew as a staff at Elon that there was a baseline for real control and command. And for us, it was about, you know, getting him one to buy into this is your identity, but then two, here's how we're going to supplement that, right? We're going to, you know, make advancements on the curveball, really, really try to develop the slider, and let's pay attention to the fastball shape. Conversely, for a guy like Brody Brecht or Marcus Morgan or Cade Obermueller, they have a higher kind of floor when it comes to stuff, right? And so it's getting them to understand that is your calling card, right? You know, last year, all, you know, the two guys, Brody Brecht and Marcus Morgan in particular, were really good at punching guys out and limiting hits and limiting damage. That was by nature, right? We were going to play into their strengths, understanding that long term, you know, if we took a more 24-month perspective, the goal is to really get you to be an incredible strike thrower as well. And so while they had to perform now, meaning last year, and we had to really kind of hone in on the command piece, you know, we knew at the very least there was a floor for success that was going to be high enough for us to be successful, knowing that the other two parts of their game were going to be taken care of. And then, you know, the command versus stuff, what's easier to develop it? I'm at the point now, at least in my coaching career, where, like, you know, we say it all the time here, like, you could teach a slider to a drunk monkey, right? And so, like, if you understand that and you know, you understand how to shape pitches and things of that nature, you know, the stuff part is pretty easy to take care of. The command piece is a little bit more interesting. You know, there's a couple different takes as to how to do it. For us, you know, we try to grasp the idea that, you know, it's not about the form of the delivery, it's about the function of the delivery. And the function of the delivery is to support intended ball flight, right? That would be velocity, break, and location. And so we don't focus a ton on the delivery, unless we know it could tangibly change one or more of those contributing parts to what makes a individual pitch successful. And so from there, you know, we're able to essentially take each guy and put them through a system for development. For us, you know, we spent 6 weeks extensively training command, utilizing command balls, exploring a little bit more variability in our throwing program, to allow our guys to get more touches at trying to read a, you know, an environment, plan their throw, and then do it. And so what we were targeting this fall in our individual sessions was missed distance and missed trajectories. One, so we could hone in on strategy and targeting a little bit more this year, but more so to really hone in on the skill of, like, throwing the baseball where you want to.
Yeah, I'm curious, what is the feedback mechanism with that sort of command training? Like, how are you guys actually implementing that? That's fascinating.
Yeah, so for guys that threw a lot last year, we had essentially the pitch location I called for each pitch type, all year tracked, and then, you know, gathered more data there this fall. And from there, we had essentially, based on each location that I called for each pitch, what the miss trajectory was, and then the miss distance. And from there, we were essentially able to take each guy and plan and track that in bullpens, in live BPs, things of that nature.
That's awesome, because I feel like from the public side, the command piece has always been one of the biggest mysteries, because you're kind of guessing at what the intent is in terms of location. But when you're calling the pitch and the location, you have a very clear idea of where you're trying to hit and where the execution either succeeded or failed. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And that's where we thought we were a little bit ahead in utilizing our information, our data, our tools. We said, well, shoot, we know where our guys are intending to throw. Therefore, we also know where they're missing, how much they're missing by, and we could really present this in a way that could be scalable and really meaningful.
Yeah. And you're kind of getting into this already, but I did want to ask you, because I feel like part of this conversation came about because of some analytics pieces we've been talking about and writing about, and just the greater access to pitching data that we have on the public side. I think it's fascinating. I feel like I have a more granular view of what pitchers do well, what they maybe don't do well. You can get really just nitpicky about certain things. So how exactly do you use analytics and pitching data generally as a coach, maybe as an evaluator, but also for that development piece? Is that like a foundational aspect of how you view yourself as a pitching coach at this point?
For sure. Part of the reason I'm here at Iowa and decided to jump back into the college game was that I understood the systems were in place. Thanks to Desi Druschel, Robin Lund, obviously Coach Heller and Coach Sutherland's growth mindset as they lead this program. And I knew all I had to do was evaluate our internal systems. And if I can make them 10% better, we were going to be in a really, really wonderful place, right? And so the way we view analytics here, and we have 25 managers, 8 analysts, like we are a full-blown like front office at this point. But the way we view it here essentially is that like analytics and pitch data allows us to be a little bit more objective and more evidence-based with regards to like opening and closing feedback loops. It's the idea that like with data, we're able to look at pitching through a little bit of a different lens. It allows our guys, like we talked about earlier, to tie their deliveries to the function of it as opposed to the form of it. And so when we collect biomech data, which we did, through our partnership with P3, we did that this fall. It wasn't just let's maximize these deliveries for velocity. It was, let's take a look at our deliveries and let's not take away a pitcher's particular superpower. What might make a guy be able to sweep a slider at 83 and 17 inches, right? We did not want to mess with that. We wanted to take our delivery and essentially say, okay, can we tangibly make a pitch shape better? Can we make location better? How can we do it? And used basically a process of backwards induction, right? If we're searching for this target shape on a fastball, right, does our delivery support that intended ball flight, right? So we start with the pitch and we kind of work our way back to the delivery and how we might be able to impact the delivery to support the intended ball flight we're looking for.
That's awesome.
That's super interesting. And then circling back to a name you brought up, obviously he's one of the biggest names in college baseball. What was it like to finally have your hands on Brody Breck this fall? Because it's no denying the talent, but coming right off the football field and going straight to the diamond, like, and you obviously practice in season, but it's a full sprint to the finish. So what was it like finally getting him this fall, slowing it down a little bit? And what were some of the small tweaks that you made with him that are going to go a really long way?
Yeah. Brody is, what he's done, everyone kind of looks at Brody and it's like, man, it's a raw skill set. It's just a raw athlete. And you guys couldn't be more dead on, right? It's like we would get him in January and there was no 6-week development path or plan for him. there was no BVY beyond like, we just got to throw low strikes and you're going to just be nasty in and around the zone to the best of your ability. All we were doing for essentially the entire month of January when we got our hands on him was building a workload capacity for him to basically pitch in the role he was going to pitch in. Right. And so we would open and close feedback loops. He would come in and debrief at their live outings. But it was essentially like, is there anything small we can do here to get you to throw 5% more strikes? Right. There was no real granular, let's get him better. And, you know, the one time you saw us have a little bit of time was last year when we took him from Friday to Sunday in our rotation. What that allowed us to do was have 10 days of work with him or 8 days, whatever it was. We had two bullpens and we pushed forward the next week. He's pitching on Sunday. Well, here comes an enormous fastball strike rate that we haven't seen. And that was with like 9 days of work, really diligent, where we could just slow him down, say, you're not competing this Friday. Let's get two bullpens in and let's get after it. Right, guy increased his strike rate by 15%.
Was that the week. So I saw, I think it was the analytics Twitter account for you guys tweeted out that his strike rate with the fastball in his last four starts, I believe, was significantly better. Was that the time period that you're referencing? And that was literally just from having a couple extra days to get some intentional work in between starts?
Bingo. That was it. Wow. That was, you know, so, let's give him just a little bit of time. It wasn't a performance move.
Yeah.
As to why we moved him out of the role, it was like, let's hit on, you know, before this tournament, before this stretch, a little bit of development with him.
So what were the kind of action items in that development window that you were able to improve the strike rate so much? I mean, I feel like he's a guy who, if he can make even slight improvements with the strike rate, just the entirety of the arsenal plays up, because you don't often see 92-mile-per-hour sliders at the college level on top of just one of the hardest throwing fastballs that you're going to see in the country.
Yeah, no doubt. And for us in that time period, it was as simple as just like rhythm and commitment. That's what we were focused on. And then off the mound in throwing program each and every day, we essentially reset the throwing program to be a little bit more variable with the introduction of command balls, varied targets, and varied movements with each pitch type. Basically like an athletic throwing program.
Yeah. Can you expand on what command balls are? Because I'm not entirely sure what those are, and I'm sure if I don't, some listeners might not either.
No, that's awesome. So Driveline came out with, you know, maybe
are these the weighted balls?
They're weighted, but they're also 5% bigger and 5% smaller. So you could have a normal 5-ounce baseball and then have one that's just a little bit thicker and one that's, you know, feels almost like a golf ball when you're throwing it. And the idea behind that is like it's a way to be a little bit more variable, increase proprioception, right? Yep. How and what is the ball doing out of my hand? With the idea that like, all you're trying to do is create really wonderful problem solvers, right? And if they could solve the problem of let me hit my partner in the head with the same weighted ball, but 5% bigger, 5% smaller, you know, if I can do that 7 out of 10 times as opposed to 4 out of 10 times, I am now tangibly better at feeling the baseball out of my hand.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm curious what you think of my very amateurish thought about Brody's delivery specifically. I think we mentioned it a couple podcasts ago, but his arm speed is so fast and his arm action is more compact maybe than you would think. Do you think there's an element of just the amount of speed and how compact the arm action is that it is maybe just generally hard to sync up and get a consistent timing with that? Or is that off base?
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them, all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualification and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
No, I think that's fair. I think that's fair, especially when you consider like the guy has never had an opportunity to work at it. And you guys, you know, said, you know, alluded to that time period we have now, where this guy has been like actively, you know, and really deliberately trying to be the best version of himself. I'm so excited for the country to kind of see what he looks like. His first live set this past Friday, he threw 46 pitches, and by our internal measures, only threw 5 non-competitive misses, with an average fastball of 99.4, with with 2 distinguished sliders, 1 sweeper, and 1 downer.
So that's what we're gonna see too: two unique sliders and a splits come in this year.
Yeah, last year we saw essentially both of those shapes, but it was just Brody like ripping the heck out of it, right? Yeah. And so we had time this year, you know, to really say, okay, let's go for 91 and a half with 10 inches of sweep, and let's go for 90 with 6 inches, 7 inches of depth. And he's at a point now where those two things are, they are different pitches, man. And he's in a good spot. And I'm really excited about his ability to, you know, flood the strike zone and get to more advantageous parts of the plate. And I'm excited for the country to kind of watch this guy evolve this year. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And I'll let Peter get off Brody Brecht in a minute, but I am curious too, since you mentioned the splitter, like, what are your thoughts on the amount of usage for that pitch, just considering the velocity he has and the slider? I feel like particularly at the college level and even high school too, a lot of pitchers just don't throw changeups, especially when they have good enough fastballs and breaking balls. It's almost like more of an opportunity to give hitters a chance to do some damage. What are your thoughts with his splitter specifically and just pitch usage for a player like Brecht and some of the other guys on your staff as well?
Yeah, so Brody, the idea behind it, we didn't know whether it would be, you know, the addition of a sinker or taking the changeup from a changeup to a splitter. We were looking essentially to cover the side of the plate in the righties away to lefties, something he didn't get to a whole lot last year. And so for a normal guy, maybe you can't cover, you know, into a righty with a splitter or a changeup. But, you know, with him, he's throwing that thing 92 to 93 and a half. You know, if he's showing that pitch in the righties away to lefties, you know, we could essentially leverage more of the plate than we did last year. Hmm. And so, you know, he's done a really wonderful job. For him, it's like a, let's prioritize location on that pitch. And if the shape is really good, it's really good. If not, we know it at least is going to cover that half of the plate a little bit more. So we'll see a little bit less weak contact, hopefully, and a little bit more whiff, you know. And it's funny, but, you know, the guy who gets a ton of whiff already, you know, it's something he could definitely improve upon. So, you know, that's the idea. And then when we talk about usage, you know, I laugh all the time that, you know, essentially, you know, we are the one program that, and there's others out there, but, you know, we don't necessarily think of our arsenal in a traditional way, right? It's not establish the fastball, pitch off the fastball. More so it, for us, it's about utilizing the fastball to accentuate the rest of our arsenal, which is more apt to get whiff, right? And so you guys did your awesome podcast, Carlos, you guys did it on, you know, build out your pitcher. And I was listening to it, and neither picked Brody Breck's fastball.
Too obvious. It'd be a boring pick.
Yeah. And I almost tweeted, well, listen, Brody's fastball velocity is going to protect the rest of that arsenal you're picking out, you know, and just having to anticipate 100 will allow, you know, Tyson Nabor's slider to play up. And so yeah, that's where I would have went if I was involved in that podcast, just as, you know, arsenal protection.
No, that's awesome.
With the pod, I think we went into it pre-show, and we also touched on it in show. We were like, all right, we could pick Breck for fastball and the banger breaking ball, but like, we're going to have a little fun with it. And so he's almost blacklisted from like build out your college pitcher, because a lot of people just pick Brody Breck. But I'm super fired up. Like, I don't want to stick unfair expectations on him, but I'm really excited to see him this season, because we were talking about it last week. It's like, and you hit on it previously, but if the competitive pitch amount, if the competitive pitch rate goes up a little and he's just around the zone even more, like, it is scary what he's going to look like. And I'm fired up to see that revamped split change, because I remember watching last year, I think it was against Texas Tech, and he threw it, I don't know how many times in the outing, but it wasn't a ton, but he turned over a few like wicked changeups. I'm sitting there, I'm like, what the, like, this kid is a freak. But in the same breath, with Marcus Morgan, you know, last year, there's no doubt the velo was there with the fastball, but the shape, I guess, in my mind, and then also in looking under the hood a little, the shape was a little more modest. But now I see you tweeting out videos of him in bullpens this fall, and he's getting up to 20 inches of ride on it. So what are some of the, again, without revealing the secret recipe, what were some of the tweaks that you went into this fall with Marcus to help maximize his fastball and really optimize that shape?
Yeah, so Marcus is really interesting, right? I think about Marcus the athlete first, and he is the second most athletic guy when it comes to coordination that I've ever coached. First would be George Kirby. George could literally do anything you ask him to within like two or three reps, including like throw footballs 40 yards lefty, you know, weird stuff, you know. So he's the second most coordinated athlete I've had the opportunity to coach. And he might be the second most athletic behind Mariano Rivera, the third, his son, who ran like a 6'2", 960. Vert was like 44 inches, right? If Marcus is second in both of those categories, you anticipate like this really, really wonderful strike thrower, right? And so Marcus actually, I think, is going to make really tangible gains in that dominate the zone, you know, department, you know, specifically cutting down the walk rate this year. Because last year, right, like Brody, it wasn't that he didn't have a full like work cycle. It was that like he was just trying to like rid himself of a crappy freshman year. Right. And so a lot of that was just trying to work on the mental skills involved with pitching really well, or pitching poorly and trying to combat that. And at the end of the last year, we saw a better version of him. With regards to the fastball, a guy like Marcus is a little bit different because he is so coordinated. For me, it was simply like education, right? This is what we need to do. This is what we intend to do with the fastball this year. And kind of sold at the idea of like, hey, let's really be intentional about distinguishing the shapes on your four seam and your cutter, specifically because like everyone blends those together when they write about them and talk about them, but more so because we know how much better the arsenal can be. And so while he was searching for cut on the four, cutter, you know, getting it more to negative two at 89, 92, and trying to really, really leverage ride with his low release height on the four seam, he's been able to be really intentional this fall about both. So it was an education, and then like affording him the opportunity to explore, kind of problem solve for himself, whether that be with marked balls, simple yes or no, good or bad feedback in bullpens, utilizing the Edgartronic cameras as like a test retest model, allowing Marcus to be Marcus in the simplest form, right? Allowing him to leverage his athleticism into like real tangible skill change.
He's someone I'm particularly really excited to watch because I think right now he's one of the most underrated arms in the country. I think he's got a chance to have three true plus or better offerings, start at the next level. You mentioned the athleticism and the low release height. The data seems like it's really going to be there this year too, the under the hood stuff. So I'm excited to watch him go to work. And did you want to go ahead, Lowe's?
No, go ahead.
Oh, my bad. I was going to say, in the age of data and analytics too, it's easy to get caught up in all these metrics and stuff, and it's harder to simplify it. As a pitching coach, you know, what are some of the under the hood metrics that you look to maximize, you know, whether it be ride on a fastball, sweep on a slider, in zone miss rate? Could you speak on that a little bit?
Yeah, I would be very curious which of the either data points or metrics you view as most important, just generally, if you had to only pick a couple.
Yeah, so that's awesome because it brings me back to when I started at Elon, right? Like, what particular metrics was I going to key in on? And for me, it was at the time, it was velocity, obviously. And then what makes a pitcher unique? What might set him apart from others? So you consider like a Sean Sullivan fastball last year, right? It was the ability to keep it flat, you know, with a good vertical approach angle from a low release, and plus extension. You guys mentioned Massey's fastball. It's a wonderful fastball with riding life and plus extension. And so you want to accentuate those, right? You don't want to cut Massey back 6 inches on extension. Now the fastball is not quite as good. And so I really focused on uniqueness, you know, 3-4 years ago, where now we're in such a wonderful spot from a systems perspective that we have what we call Stuff Plus. Essentially, all Stuff Plus is it's based on historical precedent. How have these pitches and pitches just like it performed over the last 2-3 years, kind of scaled toward the Power Five? And then we take those, we know what Division One average is, and from there, our analysts do a wonderful job of basically saying, what is the top 20% of each pitcher's fastball, slider, you know, something that he's already shown he can do. And so we call those target shapes or flash shapes. And essentially that is what we try to basically double down on each and every day, getting guys closer, a little bit, allowing them to get to their flash shape more often so that it could become more stable. And so that's where we go with it. Now it's not like a particular pitch or you know, ball flight metric. It's like, okay, Reese Buter, his fastball is good because of low release height. You know, if we could accentuate the velocity and ride and run, right, we can leverage vertical approach angle. However, we don't have to say all that. We just tell them, hey, the Stuff Plus on your fastball is a 117 on average, you know, 17% better than Division One average, but you flash these fastballs that are a 145. Can we get there a little bit more consistently? Mm-hmm. Here's the how you do it. You know, here's how we've seen you do it. Here's the part of the zone that would be a little bit more advantageous for you. And boom, we go.
You hit on something there that I'm really curious about. And that's just like the literacy of your pitchers and maybe just players overall with all of these analytics. It does seem like in general, amateur players have just more exposure to the technology and the Rapsodos and pitch shaping. And a lot of these things have kind of become more omnipresent in the industry. So I imagine they're a lot more literate today than they would have been 10 years ago in these spaces. But how do you balance giving the players the information that they might need versus overwhelming them? And I'm sure from player to player, some guys might want a lot of data and want to look into it. And for other players, it might just be kind of overwhelming and they're not able to either pick out the things that are useful to them, or maybe it just distracts them from what they do well. So how do you manage, I guess, the information diet that you're giving these players? And I guess also, how have you seen just the literacy of the players improve over the years?
Yeah, I think each player is individual. Like you noted, it's about giving each guy the right dosage, right? And so after every live outing, every player gets a report emailed to them basically like an hour after the game by our analysts. And then after that, the day after, we come in and we debrief, right? What that allows me to do and allows us to partner on, me and the player, is essentially the closing of a feedback loop where we're tying each and every guy to what is most important for them and for us as a program and as a pitching staff. And then, right, kind of like moving forward, here's where we need to focus this work week to be a 10% better next week, right? And so it's those debriefs that allow us to kind of tie a bow on it and allow guys to keep the main thing without kind of drifting onto what they might feel is important. And so those are probably the most important piece of what we do throughout the year, especially while we're performing in season, is like, hey, let's dive into the weeds the next day. You know, I could kind of curb or reroute conversations and mindsets when I need to, knowing that each and every guy is definitely diving into that report after the game. And as far as the literacy is concerned, man, guys know so much nowadays, right? And we talked a little bit about the delivery. Like, you go on Twitter, you could be your own pitching coach nowadays, right? With what these guys are putting out there. And it's about, you know, trying to channel that, all of that information into what you and your program thinks is most important for that player and for your program and pitching staff. And so that's the challenge nowadays is trying to get guys locked in on the right thing at the right time.
No, that's phenomenal. Peter, do you have anything else? Those are the big ones, but I do want to do maybe a quick hitter with different pitch types since you brought it up at some point. But Peter, I'll let you ask any other questions if you want to get to some.
Yeah, two quick ones. Your career path, you've gone from college to the pro level, back to college. What did you bring with you from college to the pro side and then from the pro side back to college? Because I think that it's been really valuable at each level you've been at.
Yeah, I think going to pro ball, I brought with me an open mind, right? That jump for me was kind of selfishly so I can learn and grow as a pitching coach. I knew that I could be supported in a way in which, you know, if I turn the page and we're 2 years from the point where I made the decision to join the Mariners, I could be a much better pitching coach because of it. And then back to college, I brought how important mental skills are, right? Watching guys trying to force their way into the big leagues when so many variables are against them. Watching those guys have to deal with the day-to-day of what that looks like allowed me to like place a huge amount of what I do in the mental skills space. The other thing was systems, right? Like, if you can clearly define your system and your North Star and then like track it, you know, make progress on it, have essentially these player plans we have for these players is like a report card on how I'm doing as a pitching coach, right? And our force plate profiling in the weight room is a report card on how our strength coach is doing, you know, with regards to force profiles. Having that accountability is wonderful. And that's something I really learned to love with the Mariners was like, now we tangibly know if we're doing our job well or not. And again, it's ultimately about wins and losses. And, you know, if we're going to win 10-8 that day, I'm taking it. But my job is to prevent runs the same way the job of a defensive coordinator is to prevent points. You know, that is, you know, how do we do that at the real granular level? That is our player plan. That is our systems. And that's what's been a lot of fun, you know, kind of jumping back into college is leveraging some of what I learned in that space, you know, and bringing it, you know, to 20 guys as opposed to, you know, an ever-flowing roster, pitching staff, you know, that type of thing.
That's really interesting. And then lastly, for at least on my end, this is probably the most hyped up and the highest preseason expectations that Iowa baseball has had maybe ever in the locker room and in the clubhouse. How are you guys kind of staying in check, managing those expectations, not getting too out of whack, and kind of keeping that focus on the North Star?
Yeah, I think it's all kudos to Coach Heller and Coach Sutherland, right? Those guys are rock stars. They've been rock stars in the college game for a long time. And what those two do better than maybe anyone else I've ever been around is they keep it about two things, right? Our people, so like the culture side of things, and then our process, right? Obviously, it's the process of winning games, right? But they talk about being a process-driven, you know, program, and they live it each and every day. We focus on like how to get better at each today so well, and it's because of their voice and you know, their vision for this program. Coach Heller is a rock star in that department, and our guys reap that reward all the time. And so we talk a lot now about like embracing the expectations, but no, it doesn't change our work, right? We have to be deliberate. We have to be intentional. This is where, you know, in our work, our day to day, that's where we're going to beat guys, you know, in April, May, and June.
That's awesome. Coach, you brought up the drafting of pitches that we did, and I'm curious if you would want to give your own answers for those pitch types. We can go through pitch types, all four pitch types and command in college baseball. I imagine you have a pretty good view, especially since you're talking about Stuff Plus, of like the pitches that are elite in the college space. So I'm curious if you would, one, want to do that, and then two, if we can go through it.
Yeah, I, you know, it's funny because I, as I was listening to you guys do it, I said to myself, I would take Brody's fastball,
yeah,
with Massey's, you know, pitch shape, right?
Perfect. Yeah, there you go.
But, you know, if I can only pick one because it protects the arsenal, I'm going with Brody Breck's fastball, right?
Okay.
And if you consider how we pitch, right, the fastball is, you know, arsenal protection.
Mm-hmm.
And the fastball really is, you know, we try to weaponize it as much as possible.
Okay.
Right? We throw more sliders than anybody. I think half the industry hates me because Brody Breck threw 50% sliders last year.
Hey, well, all those big league teams are throwing more sliders than ever too. So I don't think it's unique to just you. So you got Brody's fastball. So whose slider would you take?
This is the really hard one, right? Because the value in college, right? You think about Kumar Rocker.
Yeah.
Kumar Rocker, you know, he had that like 84, 85 mile an hour kind of gyro ball, which isn't super sexy, but it out, like its performance in college is really, really wonderful. And so, you know, I don't love it like projecting forward on into pro models as much, but like I think about, you know, Tyson Nabors, like you guys selected, really wonderful kind of gyro-ish slider. You know, Thatcher Hurd throws one that's really similar. We have a guy here who's made tons of improvement, Anthony Watts, who throws a gyro slider like 88 to 90. It's basically like Brody's. I would go with one of those. So let's just say Tyson Nabors.
Okay.
You know, just for
awesome.
All right, a little bit of variance.
Let's move to the curveball. It definitely feels like the breaking ball that has fallen out of favor a bit, which makes me appreciate the really good curveballs when you see them because everyone wants to throw sliders. And, I mean, sliders have been more effective. But if you had to pick a curveball.
Yeah, this is a tough one because I've paid no attention to it.
that's funny.
Right, because it's fallen out of favor.
Yeah.
You know, shoot, if you want to call Brody's sweeper a slider and his, you know, initial kind of depth that you want a curveball, I'd go with Brody's, but
Perfect.
You know, you give me who are some of the other ones out there?
I think I took Eli Jurzenbeck. It's like super high spin. I think he commanded it pretty well, if I remember correctly. Bit of a hammer. The usage rate was up there, so I liked his. And I think if I couldn't take his, I think Thatcher Hurts maybe was the other curveball that I would take.
Okay.
Peter, do you have one?
I think I took Thatcher's high spin pitch, ton of depth. It's like a true 12-6 banger. Like, it's legit.
Yeah, you don't see those 12-6s anymore. Okay, changeup.
Changeup. That's a really interesting one. There's no, like, Waltrip splitter out there.
Yeah,
this year,
I feel like last year we had some more obvious changeups. This year we don't have as many.
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know what I'll do? I will keep that in house, and I will go Marcus Morgan's changeup. You guys are about to see this, like, 86-88 depth ball with 18 inches of run. It's really fantastic right now. We're trying to give him reps and allow him to earn the right to throw it a little bit more right on right. But it is one of the best changeups in the country. It grades out, you know, 65-70% better than Division One on average, basically in terms of velocity, separation, and break. And so if we could really stabilize that pitch, it's going to be absolutely electric this year.
That's phenomenal. And then last one, I guess, would just be command.
Command, I like the guy, Nathan Bannister, Mariners, former Mariners pitching coach, minor league pitching coach. He's got a guy at GCU who could really command the heck out of it. What's the guy's name?
Daniel Avedia.
Yeah, that kid's awesome. He's a rock star.
Okay. I don't feel too terrible because a lot of the names you mentioned were the names we brought up. So at least we're in line with some things there. But Coach, I like to always end interviews. If there's something that we haven't brought up or something that you want to mention that we haven't talked about, please feel free. But otherwise, really appreciate you coming on the show, sharing some knowledge, kind of getting in the weeds on these players. I've had a blast, and hopefully the reader or the listeners have as well. So thank you for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. And the only thing I'll say is, you know, I really, really appreciate and am grateful for y'all's coverage of our game. I really think college baseball is absolutely incredible, and I think it's been underappreciated, like I've told you guys kind of at different times. But what you guys do for our game is undeniable, and you guys do a wonderful job covering prospects, teams, and you know, you guys keep moving that needle, man, because it's a lot of fun to read and follow along.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it. It's a blast to do, obviously, just being involved in the game in any capacity. And I think I say it on a podcast me and Ben Badler do that's kind of more wide ranging than just draft and amateur. We do pro stuff as well. But I really wish people in February, when people who are major league fans get excited about spring training, we really need people to get excited about real live games in college baseball. A lot of these prospects that are going to be in their organizations a year from now are displaying their talent. I can't imagine the talent has ever been better at the college level. So I'm pumped. I'm ready for mid-February. I'm ready to see live games. And you have me very pumped up about this Iowa pitching staff and Iowa in general. So I'm excited.
No doubt. We're all excited. And hopefully, you know, if you're ever in Iowa City or you're, you know, able to catch the Hawks, man, you know, let's grab some coffee or some breakfast or something.
Sounds good. Peter, I'll let you close it out.
And no, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on, Coach. I learned a lot, and thank you so much for being really generous with your time and being so open in your answers.
No problem. It's been a lot of fun, fellas. Thank you.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.